Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 13, 2021. A U.S. diplomat in South Sudan says the Biden administration is willing to engage the South Sudan government.
We will be confident that these statements of no return to war have real meaning once we see the peace agreement fully implemented.
And five people were killed in Sudan's Red Sea state.
What is happening in the Red Sea is manufactured. There are groups that want to create insecurity in the town and those who have political interests in eastern Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A U.S. diplomat in South Sudan's capital, Juba, says the United States is reviving its diplomatic engagement with the country. The U.S. charge d'affaires in South Sudan, Larry Andre, and two Troika diplomats held a joint press conference in Juba on Sunday to express their disappointment with the slow implementation of South Sudan's peace agreement. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
U.S. Church d'Affaires Larry Andre says revitalizing the Biden administration's engagements with South Sudan envelopes leaning on the experience of some former U.S. senior government officials and placing them in top foreign positions in African countries as well as other places around the world.
I look at prominent U.S. government officials who were in office under President Obama at the time of South Sudan's independence and have now been brought back to even more prominent positions under President Biden and who have a detailed knowledge of your country. I'm thinking of Mali Fee, who was President Obama's second ambassador to South Sudan. She has been nominated by President Biden to serve as our top diplomat for all of Africa. And she knows this country very, very well.
Andre and two Troika diplomats, Bob Fairweather, the UK envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, and Andre Stiensen, the Norwegian envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, held a joint news conference in Juba on a Sunday to express their disappointment with the slow pace of implementing the South Sudan's peace agreement. Andre noted a number of U.S. officials who held senior positions in the past are back in top positions of influence, including diplomat Samantha Power, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, who is now the administrator of the United States Agency for International Development, and Gail Smith, the former USAID administrator who is now the coordinator for global COVID response and health security at the U.S. Department of State. Andre says it's unfortunate that intercommunal violence is on the rise in parts of South Sudan, which he says is costing South Sudanese their lives, preventing farmers from cultivating their crops, and displacing thousands of citizens. When asked to comment on Kiir's assurance to citizens that he will not allow the country to return to war, Andre says Kiir needs to justify that statement with action.
We will be confident that these statements of no return to war have real meaning once we see the peace agreement fully implemented and putting reality behind the very good sentiments of the leaders. We hear those words, we embrace those words. Let's see those words turn into action by implementing the peace agreement.
American, British, and Norwegian diplomats say they want to see the country's leadership graduate the unified security forces and don't believe they need more weapons.
From everything we see, your country is suffering from a food deficit and an arms surplus. It's not the other way around.
In a statement timed to coincide with Independence Day, the Troika said the first 10 years of South Sudan's history have seen much suffering due to conflict-related abuses, famine, flooding, and disease. Andries Tiansen, the Norwegian envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, says despite their disappointment with South Sudanese leaders, the Troika will stand by the people of South Sudan.
We will not give up because we do believe that you, the people of South Sudan, have the right to and deserve a better future.
Tiansen and Fairweather arrived in Juba on Wednesday to mark South Sudan's 10th independence anniversary. The Troika countries have been some of the biggest donors to South Sudan's peace talks, which led to the signing of the revitalized peace deal in September 2018. For VOA News, I'm Wak Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Bor, where some South Sudanese marked their country's 10th independence anniversary last week with mixed reactions. Our reporter Dengai Deng took to the streets of Bor in the Jonglei state capital to ask South Sudanese how they feel about celebrating the country's independence after years of conflict and other challenges.
I'm Rachel Amor. I'm living in Bor town. The 10th anniversary or the independence itself, it means to me that I am a free woman in a free country. And our freedom actually have a meaning and a value when everyone is free, when justice is done, and you know, and when everyone is being cared for, when the livelihood of people is improved, and when we make South Sudan a better country in which to live and to improve livelihood for our people.
I'm a Jangarang. I'm a resident here in Bor, especially Bor town. Actually, it means a lot to me as a citizen because our people fought for the independence. 10 years is when we look at it critically because of the objective and the vision of the SPLA that people fought for. They have not been actually effective in the sense that we have not done what we were fighting for, because it was not just only in the name of independence. We were fighting also for service delivery, which have not been so sufficient in the country. So we are looking forward for the better South Sudan.
Yes, my name is Yuen. I'm a resident of Bota. 10th anniversary means a lot. It means that there is life in the country. When you see something progressing or growing, it means there are changes. It means that South Sudan still have, you know, time, still have power and capacity to achieve things that are not in place. The biggest thing now that is affecting people of South Sudan is insecurity. Insecurity is the biggest challenge. If you see no one moves in the forest, you cannot move alone, because if you move, you will be killed by someone, a South Sudanese also. That needs some improvement.
My name is Chudi Elam, South Sudanese by nationality. I'm staying in Bor town. What this Independent Day means to me, it really means a lot to me since the day that South Sudan became independent by itself. Many things happened. We are now free to move in our own country. We're now free to do anything in our own country. We're not being held by anyone. That is what independent means. Because those days when we were not independent by that time, you cannot do anything. You don't have that freedom of movement, freedom of maybe speaking out.
Okay, I'm by name of Duat Abraham, so I'm residing in Bor town. Okay, actually, the 10 years anniversary of South Sudan, it's supposed to mean something, but as far now, I don't see anything. So pertaining 10 years anniversary. So before, we were expecting good things to be done by our leaders, more especially good roads, hospital, and even insecurity. We expect good security to be here in our area, but we don't see any kind of thing.
Those are voices of South Sudanese on the streets of Bor expressing their feelings about South Sudan's 10th independence anniversary. Dengai Deng collected this audio in Bor. From Bor, we move to Nairobi, where a South Sudanese woman who was prevented from leaving a hospital in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, for more than a month because she did not pay her medical bills is finally free. An official with Roy Family Hospital confirms the hospital bills were paid and the woman left the hospital with her baby twins. For VOA News, Manyang David Maya reports from Juba.
Paul Okoth, External Communications Officer for Ruai Family Hospital, confirms the money was paid and Deng is now free, but insists that much of the rhetoric circulating on social media on how Deng was treated at the hospital was true.
She has been handled with dignity through the entire process. She moves around, she has her own phone, she can contact her people, the kids are well taken care of. So right now we are also happy that she's going home because it's not our wish to keep her here and she's no longer needs medical care.
Aluel James Ding finally walked out of Roy Family Hospital, where she was prevented from leaving the facility for not being able to pay medical bills totaling 1.4 million Kenya shillings, or about $13,000. Deng gave birth to premature twins through an operation at the hospital.
Oh my God, this was a long journey. I'm happy that I've gone home. I thank you guys. I thank you our community and I thank you all of you. Oh my God, for 2 months, oh my God, God has heard my prayer. I'm feeling so excited. Yeah, I can't wait to see my kids. I can't wait to hug them and kiss them. Ah, my God. I just want to say thank you to all the Sudanese, everyone that been there for me. I just want to say thank you, and I have learned a lesson.
Deng Yuot, a South Sudanese who lived in Juba at the time, said Deng deserves some kindness. Yuot decided to travel to Kenya and visited the hospital to see things if Deng was being held at the hospital against her will.
I met Aluel at the hospital with her children. She has twins, that is a boy and a girl, very tiny kids. So when I was at the hospital, I found them on the bed. And, you know, they were lying there. From the look of them, they looked emaciated and very weak. She looked very weak and traumatized, as I said earlier. So her condition was very bad. The condition of the children was very bad.
Yuot contacted his South Sudanese friends to help raise the needed funds for Deng and negotiated with the hospital over lowering Deng's bill.
The Juba team, who called itself Free Aluel Twins Group in Juba, was able to raise $6,000. And then the team, of course, there was also fundraising going on online from the North America team, and they promised us that they are able to raise $1,500. And in addition to $1,000, which was already paid, we were able to tell the hospital that we have now managed to raise $8,500. This is our appeal to you to waive the rest of the bill and release Aluel. And finally, the hospital was able to accept the part of the bill that had been paid.
Elijah Manyok, Executive Director of the non-profit Smile Again Africa Development Organization, was among the individuals who supported Deng. Manyok says South Sudanese leaders should learn a lesson from Deng's story.
We should be able to have a South Sudan where we have better access to our freedom, so that we live as human beings and we have rights to have access to quality services at any given time.
Kenya is home to many South Sudanese who have escaped the many years of conflict in South Sudan. Deng has been reunited with her two other children who were staying with a neighbor. Yuot says the team that helped Deng out of the hospital will pay her rent for the next 3 months before arrangements are made for her travel back to South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how is vaccine hesitancy affecting the fight against COVID-19 in the United States? Find out more after the break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at how some Americans are hesitant to get COVID-19 vaccination. Vaccine hesitancy in the United States is proving hard to crack, with roughly one-third of Americans not vaccinated against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. The partisan divide over the vaccine continues to hamper efforts to defeat the virus. Michelle Quinn reports.
Areas in the U.S. with low COVID-19 vaccination rates are seeing a rise in hospitalizations, including in adults 18 to 49 years old, who now account for more than 40% of COVID-19-related hospitalizations, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President Joe Biden said last week it is time to step up outreach to persuade people to get their shots.
We need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
Some Republican lawmakers said they were concerned that the federal government was planning to come to people's doors. The Biden administration clarified that the president, a Democrat, didn't mean federal agents would be forcing people to be vaccinated. The administration said the federal government would provide more support to states through what it called surge response teams. The persistent partisan divide over the vaccine appears to be hampering vaccination efforts. A little less than half of Republicans surveyed recently by ABC and The Washington Post said they are vaccinated or will be vaccinated, compared to 93% of Democrats. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the White House chief medical advisor, says it's important to reach the unvaccinated through people they trust. He spoke to ABC this week.
We've got to get away from the divisiveness that has really been a problem right from the very beginning with this outbreak.
COVID-19 hospitalizations have been rising in recent weeks in Arkansas, a state that tends to vote Republican. Just 32% of Arkansans are fully vaccinated, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, a Republican, says vaccine skepticism is tied to conservative beliefs about government. He spoke to ABC this week.
And we just have to answer it just like we have all through history, that you overcome skepticism and mistrust by truth. You overcome resistance and obstinance with saying it's important for our community and it's important for the health of our state and nation.
Looking ahead, the CDC said schools should be fully opened in the fall for in-person learning. But whether students and staff who are fully vaccinated will be required to wear masks may again be a partisan issue. Republican governors of Arkansas and Texas are saying no to students masking, and officials in California, a Democrat-leaning state, are saying yes, because social distancing isn't always possible. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
From U.S., we move to Sudan, where at least five people were killed and 10 others injured in three isolated incidents in the Red Sea town of Port Sudan over the weekend. Eyewitnesses accused some political leaders of inciting violence between local communities in the area. The Beja High Council condemned the incident and called for an immediate investigation in order to bring the perpetrators to book. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors in the Red Sea State announced three people were killed in a bomb explosion at Al Amir nightclub Saturday night in the Salabona neighborhood of Port Sudan town. The doctors' group said another person was shot and killed by a known gunman the same day, while another young man succumbed to his injuries after being stabbed. The Sudanese doctors say three other people are receiving treatment in Port Sudan Hospital. Police officials say they arrested one of the main suspects in connection with the shooting at Al Amir nightclub. All the three were traveling on one motorcycle. Security officials in Port Sudan say they arrested two other people on Sunday who were planning to set off bombs in Port Sudan's Busairi Plaza Hotel. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from Port Sudan town, advocate and human rights activist Osman Saleh says the incident is politically motivated. Saleh says some local and external political leaders are instigating local communities against each other to create insecurity for their own personal interest.
What is happening in the Red Sea is manufactured. There are groups that want to create insecurity in the town and those who have political interests in eastern Sudan.
A resident of Port Sudan's Dar Al Naim neighborhood, who does not want to be identified for security reasons, says security operatives have been randomly beating and arresting youth from Beni Amir community for the last two nights and that the arrests have been ethnically driven. Abdullah Obshar, a spokesperson of the Bija community, condemned the incident and described it as a terrorist act carried out by elements of former President Omar al-Bashir's administration who are trying to create havoc in the area. Obshar is calling for an immediate investigation into the circumstances leading to the explosion. He says authorities should also carry out a mandatory disarmament campaign in the neighborhoods that witnessed the shooting.
The government is supposed to pay attention to these dangerous elements, which have been proven by this terrorist act carried out by the Eritrean Islamic Jihad Group, a group labeled internationally as a terrorist group and has been armed by the former administration of Omar al-Bashir.
The Bija community leader is appealing to the Red Sea state authorities to control the movement of foreigners, including Eritreans, and to temporarily stop issuing visitors' permits. Obshar says the Bija community also want the national security laws strengthened.
Revision of identity and closure of the border to any terrorist group that enters the country illegally. Weak security measures from the Sudanese authorities have contributed to these groups easily moving along the border and carrying out atrocities for their political gain.
The Sudanese Transitional Government sent a high-ranking delegation headed by the Minister of Interior, Izzedine Sheikh, to Port Sudan Sunday evening. The delegation is tasked with inspecting conditions and to find out possible solution for ending the rash of violence in the area. Last week, some members of the Beja community of Eastern Sudan demanded the right to form a separate autonomous state due to what they called a lack of political will by the national government to develop their region. Dozens of people were killed and dozens of others wounded late last year during a series of intercommunal clashes in Port Sudan town between Hadandawa, Beni Amir, Nuba and other tribes in the area. In September 2020, officials say 30 people were killed and dozens of others injured during an intercommunal fighting between the Beni Amir and Nuba in Port Sudan town. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move back to South Sudan, where some South Sudanese in Yambio marked the 10th anniversary of the country's independence last week with mixed reactions. Our reporter Seba Martin Murangi asked some South Sudanese in Yambio how they feel about celebrating the country's independence after years of war and other challenges.
This is the 10th anniversary of South Sudan independence. As a South Sudanese woman, because there was no independent of women, especially in the previous, when we were together with the Khartoum government, there was no freedom with women. Women were treated like properties. But these days, women are able now to own property. Women are able to be in the government. Women are able now to speak freely. And then there are a lot of women groups coming up and then activity that relates to women.
The independence means a lot to me. I wouldn't have been here without our secession from the main Sudan. Independence is, you know, to feel at home, to feel like you are that citizen of that country. You have the right. You have the right to business. You have the right to speak. You have the right anywhere you want to go across the country.
I don't think the 10th anniversary of the independence of South Sudan mean anything to me, because when we got the independence, it was everybody's hope for better South Sudan. Unfortunately, I'm not seeing the better South Sudan that we have been fighting for the past 21 years. I was very, very happy that we got the independence, and I was hoping for everlasting peace. I was hoping for development. I was hoping for freedom. Unfortunately, all this has all gone in vain.
To me, it means that we are coming together as a country and we're moving forward, although it's at a very slow pace, but we'll get there. And the fact that the last few years, two or three maybe, has been a bit peaceful in some places, and we are able to sleep at night at least, I think it's actually better, and it just shows that we are progressing. And if we continue like this, we are going to get somewhere, and we are going to have a very peaceful country.
The village has got 10 years, and the lucky part of it is when we got in Venice, I was alive. I was kicking, life and kicking here in Juba. Juba is not the same Juba of 2011, though a lot of insecurity and some other things that hampered with the development. But if you put the comparison, Juba is developed a little bit better.
It means that we have come from far and we still have a long journey to go, and we have lacked some things to be implemented. The government should look into it, that from we celebrate 10 years, we need to seriously rebuild the country from the status it is now.
The anniversary, the 10th anniversary to me, it means a day of unity whereby South Sudanese come together to celebrate. Is the day of unity. It's the day we commemorate the departed heroes who struggled for us to become an independent country or independent nation. So we can't forget them that very day. And however, peace is not fully implemented. There's no full implementation of the peace.
Those are voices of South Sudanese in Western Equatoria expressing their feelings about South Sudan's 10th independence anniversary. Siba Martin Morangi collected this audio. That's all we prepared for you today. We now leave you with a BA Jazz with the song Semira. Listening to ABA Jazz with the song Semira. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.